You're listening to Ride Along, EMT School. I'm Mike.
And I'm Max. We're two students navigating EMT school, bringing you along week by week.
And I'm Jonathan, a paramedic bringing real-world perspective.
Join us as we share the lessons, challenges, and stories from EMT school, and hear insights from those already living the EMS life. Welcome to the Ride Along.
We've lost Mike to the eardrums.
Learn to save a life. Exactly. You know? That's what we're doing here, Max.
Exactly.
We're learning to save a life. I get so pumped.
He's so excited.
I'm so excited about becoming an EMT.
Welcome.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 13.
Yes.
Lucky number 13.
Yes.
Maybe this will be our successful failure. That's an Apollo 13 reference right there. For the right stuff, another NASA reference, by the way.
There's a theme going here, people.
So the title of this episode is The Right Stuff, Reassessment, Communication, and Documentation.
All things that are kind of important.
All the things we obviously got into this for is so that we could write everything down.
Exactly.
We could talk to people and
in triplicate really with just carbon paper.
I'm so excited. I love writing things down.
Oh, it's awesome. they're gonna look at my sheet and say, when was there a doctor on the ambulance? Because everyone says I have the handwriting of a doctor.
I started my career in EMS, and my first EMS job doing private transport, we had paper reports. So we transitioned quickly into computers while I was there. But at first I was on that tail end of paper reporting.
Well, how does it work now? Because honestly, even though I've had a couple of ride-alongs, they haven't introduced me to any of the charting or stuff like that yet. So is it mostly digital now, at least in your agency?
There may be some paper forms still floating around, and it's going to be service dependent, but everywhere that I have worked in the last decade, has used some sort of report writing software or application. Right now we're kind of in an era where it's not a hard piece of software that's on a computer that links to, you know, some sort of cloud. Right now it's like, an application, so a lot of web-based applications where we're connected to the internet at all times and writing, and maybe it'll do like a cache of what you've done so far if you lose connection, but a lot of it's just right into a cloud server, a secured cloud server at that. But
it's amazing to me, the level of connectivity, which doesn't surprise me at all because I've done a lot of stuff in tech and the internet stuff, but the fact that everything ties together, like even the heart monitors on the ambulances tie directly into charting software. And somebody had told me the other day when I was on the ride on my shift that I could take, so I can't, like as a BLS provider, I can't interpret 12 leads, but they're like, you could put 12 leads on and you can hit a button, send that to the hospital and talk to medical command. And they can tell you what they're seeing based off that. If you don't have a paramedic available, I'm like, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like in my brain, I knew it was possible, but just didn't realize that it's so ubiquitous and so integrated that that's just the way of life.
But think about it, like of all the professions, right? The fact that you can combine what's happening now, what's happened before, medical history. I mean, like they need to all be kind of coordinated. And that's like a perfect application for that technology.
Mm-hmm. There's some, they've trialed it here for a little bit. There's a program called Pulsera. And basically you would record all your vital signs and medical history and demographics into this. And it uploads in real time to the hospital. So even before you hit the hospital with your patient, they have all the information. So it speeds up a lot of things. It didn't work out as something that we continued to do here, but But it's definitely an option out there, and kind of a blast from the past. If you guys have ever seen the show Emergency, you know, with Johnny and Roy, that's a big thing. We call those training videos, when we're on shifts. So sit down and watch some Emergency. But, Johnny and Roy, they would get, and at the time it wasn't 12 leads, but they'd get the cardiac monitor out and they could transmit, via radio signal, to the hospital, the readout of cardiac monitor. Yeah. So, I mean, even going back into the 70s and the 80s, we've had the capability to transmit, some patient information to hospitals.
Wow.
Oh,
sorry. Go ahead.
No. It's just, you know, and like, as the scope has changed right now as a paramedic, I can interpret this rhythm. But back in the day, it used to be a thing, you know, you transmit it to the hospital and the doctor would actually interpret the rhythm and you'd talk to him over the radio and he'd give you orders based on what he saw in that transmission. And, but it's completely changed now, but we still have some lineage in transmitting the information, to the hospitals to get medical direction.
Amazing. I had an idea while you were talking, and I think it could be a lot of fun. So I think you were just telling us off air that you might be able to make a trip up to Pennsylvania at some point so we could all see each other in person. I'm thinking we throw on a couple episodes of Emergency and the three of us do like a watch party watching Emergency and making commentary on the show as it's happening, and we can
100%.
Yeah, I think that could be, and then we could do it at like a bonus episode of the podcast, and people could just like see us, like, you know, commenting on this show, like from it's the 1970s, right?
Yeah, Mystery Science Theater 3000.
Exactly. Emergency. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's gonna happen. Well,
if we're gonna do that, then we have to do it right. We have to have the camera above us. All we can see is the back of our heads.
Yeah,
we're in the one corner to the left,
silhouetted.
We have to be silhouetted.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 is like I love movies. Like I've for so long wanted to create a podcast series where like the camera watches, you know, some people as they watch a movie and make like basically your own like commentary to the movie.
Sure.
But it's so hard because you can't show the movie.
Yeah, like, copyright.
Because it's copyrighted. So you have to like coordinate it. Like, okay, everyone, we're going to hit the play button now. And like, how do you even do that nowadays? Because like DVDs, like the videos may start at the same at different points. But anyway, we're going to make it happen. Like if anybody is interested, maybe we'll even do it live or some crazy thing where we'll have interaction with our audience members. I think that could be a fun thing. But if you want to see us watch Emergency, like
make sure you comment.
Comment. Let us know. If you've seen it, let us know, because I've heard nothing but like, you know,
if you stories think we sound like a bunch of buffoons, let us know.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? We have had some viewer mail, which I have to share with you guys, some really complimentary stuff, some people that are interested in the podcast. So thank you everybody who have reached out and sent us notes and for all the comments that we've been seeing on, you know, social media platforms. It really helps us know that we're going in the right direction.
Sure. It just reinforces it.
Mm-hmm. And if you, shameless plug, if you're interested, I think we mentioned in the last episode too, there is some merch available too. So if you want to show everyone else how much you love the Ride Along EMT School podcast, there are shirts available. Link in the bio. But yeah, so we have some really interesting topics to talk about tonight. It's not a lot of what I would consider to be the things that I got into EMT training.
Are we saving lives?
Well, yes, we can. We are going to be saving lives.
Traumas.
You're going to be talking about massive traumas.
Is it going to involve a critical care in the moment?
Perhaps, but it's not actually doing those things. We're talking about those things.
Yes,
it's communication aspect of EMS.
Talking to people and talking to people that are in charge.
Yeah, like relaying information to command, talking to hospitals, and really, I think the big one is talking to each other, like other providers, to be like, hey, I need to inform you about what I am seeing or what I have found. Yeah. Right, like. I think that at its core, that's probably how often is that happening, Jonathan, in your job?
Yeah. So, prior to becoming an ALS provider or even as an ALS provider needing additional paramedic help for certain procedures, oftentimes we'll call on the radio and usually places will have like a either another ambulance will come out to you and you have to communicate with them, or you'll have a supervisor who's a paramedic. They'll come out and they'll help you do some of these higher acuity, more intensive procedures where you need an extra set of paramedic hands. Mm-hmm. And it happens all the time, honestly. And so many times you have to communicate with your dispatch center, or you might even have to call the hospital and talk to the doctors and get some guidance. I've done that on numerous occasions.
Right.
So it happens all the time.
It's almost like the communication is that key handoff of to next level care to help for what you're doing now, or to the hospital for their next step for intervention in life-saving medicine.
Yep.
It's like it's important or something.
Yeah, and we're talking about a few different things tonight. So it's some of it's that handoff, it's that communication about patients. It's the information that we capture about patients as well, the report writing, and really all this stuff is when you start digging into it, it's fascinating because the communication aspect is so critical to handoff and to what's happening in the moment. And then if you look at the report writing and where that information goes, like it is processed. Well, I think some of it is. I mean, obviously not every bit of data that gets gathered out in the real world, but all of that is hard data that like statistics can look at and say what is effective or not effective. This is medicine. Like this is science, right? Everything that we do, we're practicing medicine in an emergency environment. And all the data that gets found, all of the information that gets collected, all of that can be looked at, parsed, and understood in a different way to provide even better care in the future for completely different patients. So they're tracking all that stuff for a reason. It's not just, it's because you're we need to know what you did on that call. Like it's because there's a bigger purpose to it.
It's a critical data set they can use to be able to know, like you said, what's working, what's not working.
Right. And there's another thing to be said too. Communication is just like kind of a basic life skill.
Oh, no, it's not.
Yeah. Right.
Why would you need that?
I don't know.
I just play in my basement. I communicate on my Xbox.
just to add into that, I've mentioned quality assurance, quality improvement before. Mm-hmm. Places have those programs, and a lot of times, if you've got a good administrator going through those and looking at that stuff, it can drive training for.
Yep.
Where are some areas we can improve? What are some things we're seeing a lot of? It is super important because if you write a good report, you're going to be able to get that data and you're going to be able to kind of trend it and it'll immediately direct where you're going with training, where you're going with, hey, we're seeing a lot of respiratory patients. We probably ought to stock some extra respiratory stuff on the truck, that sort of thing.
Nice. Yeah, exactly. So I think there's so many facets to communication, and while it's not the trauma, like we're not talking about putting on tourniquets and stuffing wounds or, auscultating like the core medical concepts. Like these are super important. And it's what I think these types of things are what raised medicine or emergency medicine kind of out of like the trenches and turns it into like this coordinated effort amongst many different agencies and people and counties and all this other stuff where it's like, you see how all this stuff connects together. It's fascinating.
And with that in mind, what is our medical term of the week?
So the medical term of the week is one of the core concepts to this communication, and it's something that happens very often, and it's called the patient report. Now, there are a few different types of patient reports, and they can happen in different places, but essentially the patient report is your relay. Like you, like if you think of emergency services as kind of like that relay race, I'm just going to ad lib something here in terms of, there may be somebody who gets hurt somewhere, right? There may be somebody on scene who is just a lay person that's there to help as somebody with emergency, an EMR shows up, that lay person is going to relay information to the EMR and say, hey, this is what happened. Okay. So then that EMR provides care, some interventions. They mm-hmm. can't transport. Okay. An EMT shows up. All right. Here's the patient report. I'm going to give you the information that you need. I'm going to give you what happened. Here's a little history. Here's the pertinent information. Okay. EMT takes it. They may start traveling somewhere. They're going to package that patient up, do the assessments, do the thing they need to do, maybe have some interventions. Then they're going to take that patient somewhere and say they need to rendezvous with ALS care. That could happen at a different location. They can get together. That EMT then has to pass off a patient report to the paramedic.
Right.
That paramedic is going to get all the information that they need so that they can start providing care that they need to provide. And then that whole package is going to start driving towards the hospital. And then once they get to the hospital, they're going to hand that patient off to whoever the mm-hmm. trauma team or, the receiving nurses in the hospital. And they're going to give them a patient report. It's the handoff, right?
Yeah, I think the relay is a great metaphor because you're exactly correct. And if any part of that relay falls apart, the race may not finish.
Well, yeah, I mean, someone's
but
somebody's going to have to pick it up too. Yeah, like exactly. It doesn't mean that if it falls and hits the ground that the thing's over.
Right.
It just means that we know what the next thing that happen is, and we're going to pick that thing up and we're going to keep going.
Yep.
And it may need to start over, but it's certainly a lot more helpful if you're having that efficient kind of like relay handoff, it's in the perfect place. I know exactly how to take this mm-hmm. and hand it to the next person, right?
Yep.
So the patient report, and there's some goals to it. Clarity is obviously one of them. So something that's easy to understand, accuracy, in terms of data about the patient, where they were, what happened, vitals, what time things happened, because that could be a huge aspect.
Sure.
In how things are, how long somebody has been affected by either an injury or an illness. Objectivity is one of the things too, that as medical professionals, we have to be able to, it sounds terrible to say we have to objectify patients, but we have to look at patients in an objective manner to say, right. I'm not layering on any of my, assumptions.
Yeah. Your biases.
Right.
My biases to what's happening. So we have to be objective about what we're seeing.
Just the facts.
Just the mm-hmm. facts. What did we see? Not what do we think it is. Not what do we assume. It's what is it? What did we see? And completeness. Like that's a big one too, in terms of, you have to give as big of a picture as you can efficiently without giving too little. Like, it can't be just like, oh, here's this patient's an 87-year-old male. Cool.
Why are you here?
Why
again?
Are they here? Like, oh, well,
his tummy's upset.
They have severe chest pain.
Yeah.
Well, that's important too, right? And at the same time, completeness doesn't mean, okay, so this is an 82-year-old male. He's here for heart pain, but he once had his gallbladder taken out in 1976. He's got 4 grandchildren. He loves golden retrievers. He has a boat on the Manasquan River. And it's like, he's a former photographer and he once traveled to Africa and his favorite animal is an elephant and he's got
it. Pictures of
he
elephants.
Has a tusk at home that like, it's like, okay, that's complete, but it is not relevant. Right. Yeah. So it has to be all these things. And it happens at that kind of thing that we described before. It's the handoff, right? So when a patient gets handed off to a higher level provider, an EMT to a paramedic to a nurse to a doctor, probably, I don't know what happens inside of hospitals. It's beyond my comprehension at the moment. I'm sure someday I will understand, but
there's
I'm sure.
A large conveyor belt that just moves them from place to place to place.
I'm sure there will be some sort of patient handoff when it goes into, like when a patient is being given into a different level of care and custody.
Well, right. I mean, it's like the idea of different hospitals have different specialities, right? So you may get them to a hospital because it's the closest one. Well, they may be transferred over to a hospital specialized in
hospital
the care
to hospital
need.
For sure.
So
And
I mean, even the right departments in the hospital, right? Does this person need to be a direct admit to the cath lab?
Right.
Do they need to go to CT to have a scan done? Those things are important, and our reports really, really will drive where those patients need to go first and foremost because of the information we can convey.
I believe, and I might be talking out of my butt here, and I apologize to any medical professionals who work in a hospital or the kind of like that hospital environment. I believe rounds, like the idea of rounds is a presentation, mm-hmm. right? Like every morning, all the sure, doctors go yeah. around, you know, to assess all, like the, whoever the attending is saying, hey, present your patients to me. And then like, that's the process, right? So that report, while they're not being handed off in that moment, is the, hey, this is what's going on with this patient. They're an 87-year-old male. This is what's going on. This is the interventions we did. This is how they're responding. This is like, this is as complete and concise a picture I can give you to let you know the most pertinent information. And then, you know, you discuss back and forth and you move on to the next patient. And that's how they learn. They learn in a clinical environment. So that it can happen there. It can happen in the field. Like say you're presented with a challenge that you don't know how to treat, like, or you're like, hey, there is this intervention that we need to do that I am not, I need to get approval to do beforehand. Right. You're going to have to give some level of patient report to medical command or a doctor at some location who has the authority to let you perform an intervention that you may need to get approval for. That's a big one. And the one that I got to see a bunch of in my last ride along was the preemptive handoff, the mm-hmm. hospital call, right?
Right.
So letting the hospital know you're en route so that they can get all the people and the things to the places they need it to be. Like if you're incoming with a trauma, I'm pretty sure they'd really appreciate knowing that there's a trauma coming in.
100%.
Or
that's important. Yeah. I mean that again, that report, that incoming patient report notifies the trauma team to be ready and on standby. And you just basically wheel them into the room and that team's there and ready to go.
Yep. So. I got to see a pre-hospital stroke assessment or a stroke, mm-hmm. like a, I forget what they called it. I guess it was a
fast exam.
Well, I saw the fast exam in person, but the call was to elevate and escalate a possible in progress stroke. So it was calling the hospital, and they had some questions back and forth. Like, yes, I'm going to butcher this cause we don't know them yet, but like the Glasgow coma score. Like they were talking back and forth over the scores that they were seeing, what type of things they were seeing from the fast exam. So there was some back and forth in that, but there was a presentation of the information to say, hey, I have a possible stroke victim. This we're en route. This is the pertinent information. You know, do you like, we're letting you guys know it's up to you to whether or not this gets escalated or classified as a stroke case. And they did, they was like, hey, we're not going to an ER room. We're going straight to the MRI station. And that's where we did our patient handoff was right there. So like, that's important. Like that led to that type of communication can lead to better outcomes because you're preparing or you're routing to different areas, right?
Especially if you have a condition that's time sensitive.
And you can't do that without communication.
Yep.
So it can happen in different locations, right? So what are the elements of a good verbal report? Well, it may be a lot or it may be a little. It all depends on what the most important, like, you know, how can you best communicate this stuff? So it's who you are. Like, hey, I am unit 631, you know, or something along those lines. If you're calling somebody over a radio, you want to let them know who's calling so that they're like, hey, you know, we need to know who that is. The demographics of your patient. So the age, sex, chief complaint, right? Yep. Like those at bare minimum, you need to get those things across. Relevant patient history, usually in regards to specifically focusing on like the OPQRST stuff, the current, what's the word I'm looking for? The current history. So not necessarily past history, although that can be transmitted too. So what are they experiencing right now? The findings, you know, like what have you seen? What did you get on site? Like, are there pertinent vitals? Are we, you know, what are we like, what is the summary of that? And then what interventions mm-hmm. you've done and are they responding to them? So, mm-hmm. you know, hey, there's a patient. They have they're in respiratory distress. We have applied 15 liters by non-rebreather, 15 liters oxygen per minute by non-rebreather, and they seem to be like receiving that well. They seem to be breathing easier. So that is important information to give,
right?
As you're handing this patient off, right? And then if you plan to do more stuff, especially if you're calling somebody to say, hey, I have a plan and I'm going to do these things, or I need your permission to do these things, you're telling them, I am planning to do this.
Right.
Do you approve? You know, something along those lines. So that's, you know, in a nutshell, that's kind of the patient report. And that can have a lot of information in it. If it's a very complex thing, say it's a trauma casualty and they have multiple injuries all over the body, that you may find it pertinent to explain all of those things over radio or over a call, or maybe not. I saw on some calls where it could be verbose over what you're saying. Like, hey, these are the full set of vitals. I'm giving the heart rate. I'm giving the respirations. I'm giving the SpO2. I'm giving the blood glucose, you know, the full Monty. Mm-hmm. Or I saw a call where it was, hey, all vitals are in normal range.
Right.
Except for this elevated BP, all other vitals normal. So it could be something like that.
And that is going to be highly dependent on the agency and the organizations you're interacting with. I've worked with some hospital systems, and the one that I work in currently, they want the straight facts. Now they want a full set of vitals and the straight facts, but there's not a whole lot of pleasantries going on. It's it's nothing but business. And I've worked in some places where it's very shorthand. It's that example of, unless something is out of whack, we're not gonna give you a full set of vitals unless they're some sort of altered from normal. Mm-hmm. So it comes into play of understanding the system you're working in.
Yep.
But yeah, having that baseline of knowing you may have to give all that information, and just having it on standby and ready to go before you start that report. Super, super important.
Yeah. And you know, I think one of the things that I've seen about this is it's easily one of the more intimidating aspects of EMT school. Yeah. Like the idea of not only, hey, I need to know how to do those things, but now I have to then like internalize it, understand it, and then be able to verbalize it in any moment at any time.
While stressed out, while full of anxiety, while things are going on around you.
Which speaks very much to, that's why you got to keep a clear head. And I was reading this book, or I did an audio book of a really great book. It's called Lights and Sirens by Kevin Grange. And one of the kind of mantras, this is his second book. I'm in the middle of the second book. I think it's Wild Rescues. And there's a mantra in there of, remember, it's their emergency. It's not yours. Like it's so easy to get wrapped up and amped up into these things that you lose the kind of composure.
Right.
And it's like, you have to treat it like this is you're a professional, because without that, you could be a liability. So it's not your emergency. It's their emergency. So I'm like, that is so powerful. And it really resonated with me when I was thinking of like how to keep calm on radio stuff and just kind of like, hey, I'm just going to deliver the information I need to deliver. Right.
Something as simple as, and I practice this all the time before I give my report, I make sure I have all my information in front of me to fall back on if I need to. But before I start talking to somebody over the radio, I just take a deep breath and then I give my report. But taking that second to take that deep breath, it's super, super important. It gives you a state of calm. If everything was chaos before that moment, you get a moment of that deep breath and you're able to give that report.
Yep.
Yeah, I teach so I teach a radio class, and one of the, like, there are four key, like, I call them the four P's of communication, or at least communicating over radio, and one of them is preconceived. And I find that to be the one that is most important when you're talking on a radio. You have, like, it is not something that you can figure out as you're talking, because it is very apparent when you're doing that. So you have to know what you're going to say. You have to have a plan for what you're going to say. And if you just take the moment to breathe and kind of think through, okay, this is the information I need to relay, the communications go so much better when you just slow down.
Yes.
Which is ironic, because you think, oh, I need to go as fast as I can. I need to get them this information right now. No, it's going to go a lot better if you just chill for a sec and compose yourself, think about what you got to say and say it. So A lot of cool stuff. Patient contacts. Kind of intimidated. Like, I've done a lot of radio work. Like, especially, like, I think the being a pilot helps too. Like, I had to learn to use radios a lot when I was flying and talking about, like, you know, hey, this is critical information that I need to do in a very specific way, and I have to be very accurate about it. And even with having experience doing that, I still get intimidated by the idea of, like, relaying a patient contact.
Well, think about it. Like, when you're talking about the radio information, your anxiety and your stress point is you. Like you're affected by that immediately. With this, someone else who is dependent on you is affected by it. So if you weren't more stressed out about that point of it, I'd be worried about you.
Sure, yeah.
like, huh, when did you become a sociopath? Like, when did that happen? Because you're holding their life in your hands, and that report, how efficient it is, how correct it is going to the hospital, is going to affect the care they decide to get ready for them. And if it's a critical patient on top of everything else, I mean, there's a lot of pieces there and a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
So you should feel some anxiety about it until you get to a point where you're proficient with it and it's just like a reflex. Yeah.
I'd be weird. I'd think it'd be weird if somebody was like, if it just rolled off their back, like water off a duck's
then
back.
Maybe they shouldn't be doing the job at that
point. Or maybe they're just like awesome.
or they're awesome. Either you should be fired or you're amazing. There's no halfway point. There's no gray area. It's one or the other.
So I mean, as long as I've been doing this, I mean, talking on the radio is still, you know, nobody wants to sound dumb.
Yeah.
Right. And because it's a recorded line and because, you know, your peers are listening and you don't want to sound dumb.
Right.
But I mean, the best way to go about it is, hey, if you flub up on the radio, just fix what you need to fix and go on.
Get back up on the horse.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't stress about it.
Yeah. Have you heard some bad calls?
Man, it's and it's more common than not, right? Yeah. Like, and it kind of goes to our point of talking about this job is about communication, and some people have that as a big strong point for themselves, and other people, they still struggle with it. And sometimes I struggle. It depends on what's going on, right? Like, I might be tired. This might be the 12th call in a row that I've run, and I'm exhausted, and, you know, I might flub something up. But the big thing is you've got to get the information out there to the people that need to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Exactly.
Now, so here's a question for you.
Yeah.
So, Jonathan, as you're presenting the information, like, are you better served if you're flubbing it to just stop, hold, repeat? Or
I think it's situationally dependent. Sometimes you may like unkey the mic, you may give it a second, take a breath, and then be like, I'm gonna start over. Or sometimes if it's just a minor thing, you'll just scroll right on through. At the end of the day, it's, again, we talked in the last episode about the mnemonic, when, what's important now, and relaying what is important in the moment is going to be paramount, to, you know, some of the smaller things. So if it's minutia that you flub up one, don't worry about it. Just keep rolling through, and you can adjust that when you get to the hospital and give a face-to-face report.
Gotcha.
One of my favorite movies ever is The Replacements. You guys have seen that movie?
That's a great movie.
Right? Like it's Gene Hackman and Keanu Reeves, John Favreau is in that movie. He's my favorite character in that movie, by the way. Danny. And there's a scene in there where I think Gene Hackman's asking the entire team of like, what terrifies you? And they start throwing out some ridiculous answers like dogs, like terrify me, or something crazy like that. Like, you know, clowns, I don't like clowns. And then Keanu Reeves in his kind of very, you know, demure and, you know, prolific kind of way of speaking, he's like, quicksand. Like, and they're like, yeah, quicksand's, yeah, that stuff will swallow you a lot. Everyone's like, and like, no. Like, I think if somebody's like, no, explain what you mean by quicksand. Like, the idea of one thing going bad and sucking you in, and then like it just snowballs and kind of pulls you. Like, that is, I think, the thing that terrifies me too, of like, it gets in your loop. right? It gets in your brain and it just festers. And you're like, oh, I messed up that radio call. And now I'm going to mess up the next one. And I'm just going to, I won't be able to call again. And I'm going to have to, I'm going to have to like quit. And I'm going to have to move because people are going to know who I am. Like, you can't, you can't, you can't let it fester. You can't let it live rent free in your brain. Right. So
everybody messes the radio report up.
Yeah.
It's just, you just got to roll with it.
Mm-hmm. It's,
but,
it's part of the, it's part of the job.
I thought quicksand was going to be a bigger problem. Yeah. You know, and like, I really thought it was going to be a bigger problem.
It really,
I haven't ran into it yet.
I've not seen it in person, and like, you know, movies and stuff made it seem like it was going to be everywhere.
Yes.
That and sharks.
Yo, I don't mess with sharks. I'm still, I watched a documentary last night on the, I think it's the 50th anniversary or 35th. How long ago was Jaws?
It's been a long time.
So I think it's the 30th anniversary,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
No. 50th. It's 50th anniversary. Yeah, I got, I had an, and even knowing that it's a big giant animatronic shark, I still don't like the swimming in the water. Like that movie messed me up. That and Jurassic Park too. I was, that affected me when I was a child.
You need to not watch animal movies, apparently.
Probably. It was probably like my dad was very loose with like letting me watch all those like horrific, like, I mean, it's not really horror movies, but like they're movies with horror in them. So I watched those when I was a kid, and man, I was messed up. Like
it was so,
nightmares and shit.
So mine is actually a quasi medical movie, Outbreak.
Oh, I love Outbreak.
Based on the book, The Hot Zone, about a highly contagious hemorrhagic fever. Yeah, I watched that at like 8 years old and was terrified of hospitals. And then look at me. Yeah, I'm in a hospital. Dustin every Hoffman, day.
Kevin Spacey,
Cuba
Gooding Jr.
Yeah.
What's his face? Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Donald Sutherland.
President. Yeah. I mean, it's got all the people.
It's got, Rene Russo, I think.
Yeah,
as well.
I think so. Yeah.
Man, I should go on like movie trivia. Like, I don't know how I'm pulling all these names out of my hat.
Yeah. Apparently, like, this is your
I love, jam. I love that movie. African Mutaba. You know?
Oh, man.
What's with the orange juice?
Yes.
No. Even to this day, like I've worked past my fears of that a little bit. Yeah. No. I'm gonna stay my butt right here where.
So when I was a kid, my dad had me. We were watching this really bad sci-fi movie, and in the one town they were in, there were these cockroaches that ate people clean to the bone, and we moved into an apartment building that had nothing but these giant cockroaches that liked to liked to frequent the bathroom and the toilet. Like that had me so messed up.
Oh wow,
so messed up.
I feel like we've stumbled into sheriff
therapy,
EMT
therapy.
It's important.
Yeah, that's something that you're going to talk about a lot. You're going to talk about everything under the sun with the people you're working with.
It's important. You're going to talk about movies,
yeah,
music. Yeah.
I saw that movie.
It's important to relate. It's important to connect. It's important to communicate all this stuff to people. Like,
I don't think it's that important. You survive. I don't know if it's important to communicate all this stuff with people, but certainly,
yeah,
in small doses.
Well,
hey, if you have a favorite movie that affected you in a traumatic way, please drop us a line. Yeah,
there's not a parent alive that hasn't done that to their child. I haven't been able to because my son's going to be a serial killer when he grows up. But like, I haven't found one yet that bothers him.
Well, you know, some kids are just stoic, I guess.
Tanya.
So, back on track.
Back on track.
Communications. It's super important. We have to be able to communicate. We need clear professional communication whenever we're doing it.
Yeah.
Especially when we're now using all this technology to then expand our ability to not just talk with whoever's in the room with us, but then outwards to the radio where other people can hear it. And there's a bunch of other concerns when you start doing that too. Like, are people hearing what I need them to hear? Am I saying too much over the airwaves? Right. Like, some of that stuff is not, it's open. It's open out in the clear. So like, now you have to start worrying about HIPAA as well too. Like, you know, making sure that you're paying attention to patient privacy. You're not announcing things about patients over the air, like identifying characteristics such as address, name, social security number,
pertinent information. Yeah.
Well, it's identifying information.
Yeah, exactly. Like, but keep to the pertinent information. They don't need to know his name.
Exactly.
They don't need to know what street he lives on. They need to know age, sex. Like, for personal information about that description of that person, keep it as straightforward as possible.
Yeah. So you have to be clear. You have to be professional. Like, especially when you start using things like radios. And the phone is a radio, too.
It
like,
is indeed, yeah.
That is the same thing. It just uses a different type of technology. So I've seen a bunch of EMS professionals in our service. It's kind of like 50-50. Some people will use a radio, and some people will just call the hospital with a phone. And
It's going to be dependent on your hospital. It's going to be dependent on your service. And it's going to be dependent on what you are doing. If I'm keeping privacy in mind, I may call the hospital and just be like, hey, this is the deal. I've had some mental health patients that I wanted to protect their privacy, and so I called the direct line to the nurse's station in the emergency room to relay that information, because quite honestly, it wasn't everybody's business in radio land what was going on,
right?
Or I need to speak directly to the doc. I mean, I've got the radio to fall back on, but mobile phone is honestly what I want to talk to them on.
Right.
So, what about report writing?
Well, report writing is, it seems to be pretty important as well. Cause like, not only do we have verbal communication, like verbal in person, verbal over radio or technology, then we start getting into written communication, which is, now we start getting into things. Well, the other stuff is recorded too, but the written communication is literally meant to be a record, right? It is meant to be in posterity, something that somebody can reference about what just happened.
But how do I spell words without autocorrect?
Actually, that is a very difficult thing. So, by the way, expressive aphasia is not spelled with an E. I did find that out the hard way when I handed in my paperwork the other day for like my school ride tracker sheet, like patient contact sheet. And I handed it to the paramedic who I asked to sign off on it. She's like, you need to spell check this before you show this to anybody. I'm like, well, thank you. I will certainly go. I'm going to go cry in the corner and
Get out my phone and spell check all this stuff. Yes,
but there's a reason for that.
I know. It's important. Like it is a legal document. Like that is representative of not just your performance, but the agency that hires you. It's representative of the care that you get. Like all of it plays together.
And look, I'm not going to pretend that I've never made a grammatical or spelling error in a report. Definitely have, but try and limit those because of the fact that it is a legal document. If it were to ever go to court and something be called into question, that is a point that a lawyer can really try and tear you up on, because it's like, oh, well, you can't even spell the medical term correctly. So how are you providing care that's competent?
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the things that we make a big deal about for good reason.
What the phrase that kept coming up the night they went through this, and it seems so like apparent, is like, if it wasn't written down, it didn't happen.
Yeah.
Like, or if it wasn't written down, it did, like, basically writing it down is what will save you. Like, you can't just assume that everyone will have good faith in what you did or what somebody else did. Like, it needs to be reported. The truth needs to be represented in the report.
Yes.
If you didn't document it, you didn't do it.
Right.
Yep.
Right. Like, and that is legally, like, we all hope that in this world, like, I know I firmly believe that, like, if I give good vibes out there, if I provide good juju and good karma out there, that I will likely get that back. However,
sure.
There is, we live in this kind of very litigious world where, maybe not even to a patient's wants, but more their needs. Like, they're only avenue for making sure that their family can be made whole is to basically sue anybody that is associated with a bad thing that happened in their life, which unfortunately can mean you.
Yep.
It's
100%
fairly common.
Yeah.
Unfortunately it is, it's fairly common. And I mean, the fact of the matter is medical malpractice is one of the leading causes of death in the United States. So for good reason. And as a healthcare profession, we have all done a lot better in recent years. It's cumbersome though. In some of the things that we have to do to make sure that we are legally protected, you know, it takes away from the thing that we really wanted to do when we got into this, is which is help people and do the actual things. But this is super important because we want to continue to be able to provide those services. So we need to protect ourselves legally. We need to protect our organizations and agencies legally.
Yeah,
and that's why writing good reports is super important.
And aside from just protecting your own ass, like in reality, that record might be used for further patient care too.
Yeah,
100%.
So if you're not putting all the information in there, you might be compromising some small detail, something that a physician or another clinician down the line may find to be the key to helping that patient, right? So it all has to be in there, and half-assing it only put yourself at risk or somebody like you or the patient. And that's the, you know, and that's the one thing that I've kind of heard from this like topic too, being out in the quote unquote real world, is like the idea that like some people just find it to be such a burden and they'll like half ass the paperwork. Like they'll put in the bare minimum. Like right. if there's like, you know, boxes that don't necessarily need a lot of information, or like, you know, you could skate by like putting like an NA or something in there that's like, you know,
right,
not the real information or not detailed information, they will do it because they're like, that's too much of a pain in the butt.
Right.
It's like, no, you gotta put, if there's a box for it, you should put as much information in there as you can.
And I would say like the value of being able to do a shorthand for yourself, but then taking the time when filling out the chart, like you were saying with like the spelling error with the aphasia, you know, spell that as best as you can in your own shorthand on your notepad. But then when you get to filling out the chart, like take the time to, you know, take that time to spell check yourself.
You're assuming that people are taking their own notes though.
Well,
which is a discipline that I find most people are not doing now.
And I know for me, I require it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the odds of me remembering something that happened 5-10 minutes ago while under stress, I know for myself, if I write it down, even if it's barely legible by me, I can then go back through it and take my time.
Oh, I think it's
filling it out where it counts. So
even with the stuff we were talking about before in terms of communication, like Jonathan, what you were talking about in terms of like you try to line up what you're going to say.
Right.
If I need to make a radio call or something like that, I'm going to write it down. I'm going to make jot notes or whatever, because it doesn't need to be legible by anybody else other than me. But like that note taking stuff, hugely, hugely helpful.
Yep.
Do that all the time. Did that the other night. Had a patient that had a unit of blood that they needed. And it was super important to write down when that blood started, because there's some things with like when you start blood, if a person's going to have a reaction, you got to. Give them a few minutes to see if they'll have that reaction. So it's super important to know when did we actually hang this blood and when did it start running. So, I mean, I did that for myself because I knew that that was going to be asked when I brought them into the hospital.
Yeah. So, patient reports, written reports, super important, just as important as being able to communicate live in person. And there's, you know, I think there's probably a few different, you know, reports that you will see, like, so the actual chart itself, I think we started off by saying that's largely electronic nowadays, but I know in my service, there are other paper things that also need to go along with that. Like, I don't know what actually it is. I don't know if it's a trip sheet or just a patient sheet, but like we have these things called yellow cards that I know where they are. So when somebody asks me, hey, grab me a stack of yellow cards, I know where they are and where they go. I just don't know what they're truly for yet. And that is tracking information about the patient. And then we have to make sure that the hospital signs that when we drop the patient off. So it's kind of like a record of us transferring care. So that's one thing you may need to, you know, also be aware of is like, does your agency have other types of paperwork that aren't necessarily just the charts, right?
Yeah. A lot of them do. I work for several agencies that have, they call them run reports trip report would be another thing, but it's an internal tracking document for where did we go and what did we, you know, what did we go for and who was there. And it's a way to keep track of, all of that.
What about refusals? Do you have to do a different, form
so
for
it's,
refusals?
Because everything's electronic, the refusal is built into that. And so if you're listening, let's describe a refusal. Let's say we get to a patient and they decide that they do not want to go to the hospital and they don't want any services from us. Or maybe they want us to check their blood pressure, but then they decide they don't want to go to the hospital or what have you. Myriad of circumstances. Or let's say somebody else called for them and they don't want to go to the hospital and they have proven that they are competent to say no. There is a legal document that they have to fill out stating that they have been explained the risk of not being evaluated further, that we have come out, we have tried to talk to them about whatever, that if they wanted to call back, if they changed their mind, that they can call back and somebody will respond to them. And all of this is important information because, again, If you didn't document it, it didn't happen, right? Yeah. So you've got to document it, and it's super, super important. It's one of the places I work actually implemented body cams because of some issues with a patient refusal that we had. So it's very important to document if somebody doesn't want to go to the hospital and they just flat out refuse care.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have that documentation backing you up as to why you didn't take them to the hospital.
Yeah. So like there's all different types of these records that we have to keep.
Right. And if you're a student and you're doing your ride along service, if you're doing all these things now, you're doing the volunteering side of things, ask the questions of like, what is that paper for? You should open your mouth and ask the question so you have the answer, because every service is going to be different.
Yeah. Like
they're all going to have different procedures.
Yep.
You know, so until you ask those questions, you're not going to know what the answer is.
Yeah.
And it's hugely important that you know what the protocols and procedures are for your service, for your area, for your county.
Yep. So lots to think about.
Tons to think about.
Written, verbal,
electronic.
Hell, there's even, nonverbal communications, like, and we don't have to go super deep into it, but like how you're interacting with patients, how you're interacting mm-hmm. with other individuals. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even have to be anything that is like actual expressive thought. It's just your body language of like, are you intimidating? Are you meek? Are you welcoming? Are you mirroring mirroring is like one of those mm-hmm. like body language techniques that helps somebody feel at ease. But like, How are you presenting yourself without actually speaking to people?
Right.
Huge. Like in terms of patient care and just team camaraderie. Like, are you walking around with some RBF all the time? Max.
Sunglasses.
Sunglasses.
Only here.
Yeah. Sunglasses can, you know.
Oh, people, that is such a
pet peeve. We as human beings like to be able to see each other's eyes.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It you know, shows that you're being honest and genuine. Another one is, and we talked about this when we were talking about the different age demographics, but you know, getting on somebody's level with them, right? You guys are both pretty tall. So especially with kids, you might have to kneel down and talk to them face to face.
Yep. Yeah.
That stuff's super, super important.
I'm 100% sure I'm going to be wearing out the knees in my EMT pants, like more than I think I will, like, you know, more often than I think it will.
Slip on knee pads under the pants.
Yeah, maybe. But just the idea of like taking a knee is something that like I've done almost every call just to get on the level of somebody sitting on a chair. So
yeah, I have a pet peeve. Like if you're walking to someone's house, I don't care if you're doing this or anything else. If you're walking in someone's house, take your sunglasses off. Like it's just rude.
So, you know, I think that pretty much, you know, kind of wraps up like the idea of, you know, there's different forms of communication, different ways to communicate, different reasons to communicate. Ultimately, though, you know, when you're recording all this stuff, you want it all. I read this morning, and one of the themes that I think is really kind of, you know, comes into play here is you want all of those stories, like all of the accounts of something that happened to align.
Sure.
The way that you wanted it, people to like understand you, you want that to align with, you know, what you actually said. You want what your partner saw to align with what you said. You want, you know, the radio calls to align with what your trip sheet or your medical records say. You want the patient's kind of, you know, accounts to be in line with what you told them. Like, all of these things tell a story. And the more that all those things coincide with each other, the better off A, the patient care is going to be, but B, you're going to be in terms of if there was ever a discrepancy. So the more things that align and the more things that all fit together as truth, I think the better off everyone is.
Oh yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Anything else on communication, guys? Like that you could think of?
Practice it.
Yeah. Like everything else.
Like, it's not that big of a deal to, you know, if you're a student, go home to practice your vitals and then practice your radio call. Like, have your wife play the hospital.
Yeah.
And read from your notes that you've written down of the vitals you've taken. Like, practice it. It's a skill. You have to practice it.
Yeah. 100%.
Cool. Well, with that.
With that in mind.
Yeah. We've just gone through the broad concept of communication and reporting. And Max, is there a tool out there?
I don't think so. I don't think there's really. I think if what we need to do is get a cup with a rope.
Yeah, a cup and a string.
Just drag it behind.
Yeah, I feel like there's a tool of the trade that really is closely related to communicating with people on a mass scale in a moment's notice.
I think it's a radio or radio. That's what it is.
Radiums.
Radiums.
Yeah. Oh,
radiums.
Yeah. Oh, it's the plural of radio is radii.
It's nice to know. So radios are very common, especially in EMS, whether it's for a policeman, for ambulance service, for firemen. There's some key reasons for it. You get direct communication to your dispatch. So they're dispatching you out to the patient. And that could be through your electronics system that's in the bus, or it could be straight over the radio that's in your bus. You also have
portables. By bus, he means ambulance.
I keep saying bus.
because, that's a colloquial.
Because I'm going to start using more pro jargon as much as I can.
I know.
I like it.
You know.
And it's easier. It's one syllable. Bus.
It is easier to say than bus, ambulance.
Box.
Exactly.
But, rig. Apparatus. Rig.
Apparatus. Yes, exactly.
It's on the apparatus floor.
But your ambulance is going to have a radio in it. And also, you generally have the ability to have a portable radio on your person as well, a handheld. The other thing that's important is communicating with the hospital. We talked about this through communications and putting your calls in, is being able to, over the radio, talk to the hospital and give your reports. And also, the other thing, too, is gathering more resources. If you come up on an accident and there's multiple victims and you realize that I need help, that's what's going to get you help. Is hitting the radio, calling dispatch, and letting them know, hey, I need ALS immediately. I need 4 more BLS ambulances, like giving that information. And it's a quick one button push to get that communication across.
I will say that is actually the biggest advantage to radios over other things. Yep. So if you're thinking about radios and as like a one point communication, like, hey, I call dispatch and dispatch calls somebody else and that goes back to dispatch, that's fine. But what radios allow everybody on that network to do is have situational awareness about your communication with dispatch.
Yes. So
it allows them to start preemptively saying, hey, they're being dispatched to a multi-car pileup. We haven't been dispatched there yet, but maybe we should start moving in that direction. Mm-hmm. Or maybe 100%. We should, hey, if anything else, hey, check in the back to make sure we have all our trauma gear. Like, you know,
exactly.
Just like prompting the situational awareness to say, hey, this is now on a whole net of people. Like, and the reason I get into this, I think radios are super cool because I'm a nerd, but but that a lot of people don't realize that that's the biggest advantage to it.
I think people that are in that younger generation, especially all the students in our class, like when you talk to them about radios, they're like, these things are outdated. We have these phones now. What do we need that thing for?
Funny enough, most of those radios also have ability to work as cell phones nowadays. Yeah. Like they work, they can work on cell networks as well.
But I think the most important part of that, we're talking about scene safety. So the ability to keep your eyes up, watching what's going on while just hitting a simple button, either with a mic with a key on it or the actual radio with the talk button on it, the push to talk, you're able to keep your eyes up. You're able to keep awareness of what's going on around you, and you're not sucked into that thing.
Yeah, it's the big advantage of verbal communication versus like everyone wants to text.
Exactly.
I love texting. Like I love not having to talk to people on a phone.
Right.
But that is a completely different form of communication.
As far as popular ones right now, the Motorola's APX series, the Astro 25 and P25 digital radios.
Well, the Astro 25 is the standard that gets used for the radios, which is a alternate form of a P25 digital standard. So
we got to get our hands on them and finger touch them a bunch, and we're informed that they're very, very expensive.
It's like $14,000 radio.
That's all.
They are really
not a big deal, right?
Stupid expensive. Amazing. Their whole, how much was their whole countywide network cost to set
$50 million? I think he said
millions upon millions
of dollars.
Million was dollars.
It 50 million?
I think he said 50 million.
I thought it was six, but either way, it's like
it's ridiculous.
It's an astronomical number that you would never even be able to comprehend.
The radios give us all those options and those abilities. If you go back in time, back in the 40s and 50s, early ambulances had no direct radios. Communication went through police or hospitals by phone.
Could you imagine that, Jonathan? Like you running an ambulance all day long, and every once in a while you'd have to just like pull over and call the hospital on a landline.
That's pretty crazy. I got one for you. And this is way before my time, but talking to some of the old timers in the agencies I've worked for. Back in the day here locally, they used to announce 911 calls over the AM/FM radio.
Oh, yeah.
I believe
it.
That makes sense.
So there'd be a channel you'd tune into, and they would get on, they would interrupt whatever programming they had going on, and they'd say, hey, Covington Rescue Squad, you have a call at such and such address for such and such thing. And the people, because pagers and things like that hadn't come out
yet. Yeah, that makes total sense. I mean, it's like the radio equivalent of the, like, there's still towns that have those air raid sirens to call all the volunteers.
My town has a really annoying siren that they publicly test every day. And every single time there is any kind of a fire call, it goes out over that stupid thing. It's dumb.
So they, it looks like over the, so it started in like the 40s and 50s. They started using radios, which is interesting because that's right around like World War II. That's when we started using radios in general. Mm-hmm. And then it progressed over time to like what? Like they start getting some more advanced radios over time.
So 60s and 70s is where we see a lot of the innovation across the line, whether it doesn't matter what you're looking at in EMS. Because that's basically when modern EMS was formed.
Right.
They had VHF radios.
Right on the white paper.
Yeah. They had VHF radios that let crews contact the hospitals directly for medical orders. And then back in 73, the EMS Systems Act was passed and established hundreds of EMS systems nationwide. And then the UFH channels were created, and they were created dedicated for EMS.
Well, UHF.
UHF, yes.
Yeah. And so UHF existed. It's just that they... UHF
allocated.
It's particularly good for public service and line of sight type radios that use like repeaters. Mm-hmm. And that's how all these systems work, is like these mass systems, like giant infrastructure of linked repeaters, basically connecting things countywide across counties, across states.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's quite impressive when you start looking at how all that stuff works. But they pretty much all work on UHF.
And through the 80s, 90s, more improvements. Today we use digital trunked systems, and they provide encryption.
Which is super nerdy.
Which is super cool.
I will totally go into
trunked
systems someday if anybody wants me to. Nobody wants to know what a trunked system is.
And most of the rays that we're seeing, that especially we saw the other day when he came in and kind of demonstrated them, they're kind of the same basic format. They have very simple selectors up top for, I think it was 15 channels.
Channels, yep.
That are programmed in by the county. Sometimes
they will have groups of channels too. Yeah.
And they're programmed by the county. Like the county is are the ones that program those in. So so as an EMT, you don't have the ability to mess with those.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, you know, you can go into so much stuff on radios. Like you can dedicate years of your life. They take all that out of it in the kind of public service field and they go, hey, we're worrying about all the infrastructure and how to set this whole thing up. Here's the box, push the button on the side, spin the dial on the top if you need to talk to who. So I think the key takeaway for the radio stuff for us, like the users, is really knowing your channels.
Yep.
Like that seems to be the biggest thing of like, if I want to talk to a specific person or a specific department or dispatch or medical command, they exist usually on different channels. Yep.
And know what those channels are.
Or if you want to talk to police, mm-hmm. or if you want to do what's like called a talk around, or like you, where you're not going out over the repeaters and stuff, you can do all that type of stuff. And usually you have the ability to, but knowing the channels is big.
Yep.
Knowing what the buttons do. Like there's usually a red button on the top of those radios. Yeah. Like that's the, hey, I need help button. Like right now. Send everybody.
Yeah.
That's usually those really high end public service radios will have that.
Don't use that. Like if you're the guy that uses that a lot or hits that a bunch, I'm guessing you're going to get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, maybe. And then the cool thing about those things nowadays is they all have GPS repeaters in them or GPS receivers in them. And they will, like, whenever you talk to somebody, and by the way, everything's all recorded all the time.
Yeah, that's the other thing that was a key point is that everything you say is all recorded and can be used in court.
Yes, everything all the time is all recorded. And what was I going to say? No, so it's GPS. Mm-hmm. Like they have GPS receivers in them. And if you hit that button, or usually it may, like anytime you're keying up that radio or every few seconds or so, it's probably sending your position to a central command saying like, this is where this radio is.
A caveat to that, Mike, a lot of the radios have that, or most of the new systems have that capability, but
whether or not it's being used is.
And that's what I was going to say. So like in our area, it was an add-on that the county didn't want to pay for.
Sure. Yeah.
And so that is not the case everywhere, but it is, the radios do have that capability.
They are getting so, like, you know, and it's almost kind of funny because you see all like the really, the big name agencies or like the bigger cities, they get like the top end stuff because they have the tax revenue that they can invest in like these crazy radios and stuff. And then over time they get more crazier radios and then the other radios get handed down to other departments mm-hmm. and other agencies.
Right.
So eventually like you're going to have agencies out in like the middle of Idaho that have no tax revenue. They eventually get like cool radios, but like, it all depends on the infrastructure.
Sure.
And a lot of people don't realize that like a radio is only as good as like you can do a radio to radio type thing, but it all depends on what that county is investing in terms of like a repeater infrastructure, how well it's connected, all the extra data stuff. So it's, I'm getting too deep. I told these guys to not let me nerd out on radio stuff. I was in the class. Like I'm like the guy's talking about radio stuff and I'm like, ooh, is that like a duplex or a simplex thing? Like, can you make them talk? And people in the class were probably going like, what is this guy talking about? I'm like, listen, I want to know, like, I want to know how this, because I'm like, you know what? It seems really interesting to be in a job where you're the guy that sets up the radios for the entire county.
Yeah.
Like I could probably get my jollies off.
I confidently said they need you to do this job.
See, it for me, it's like Tropic Thunder. What did he say? He said, I only know the sound it makes when it takes a man's life. I don't know how it works.
Yeah,
for me, it's like, I only know the sound it makes when I get a call.
Yeah.
Key takeaway, have a radio, know your channels and how to use it.
And keep it charged.
And keep it charged.
That's big.
Put it on the charger.
Although, believe it or not, our ambulance squad, I'm not responsible for that.
No?
No, there's a guy that's responsible to make sure that all those things are on the charger and plugged in.
Seems like that should be everyone's responsibility.
You would think so.
Your responsibility to be ready to charge radios. Never ends.
It never ends. But so I think that's a great tool. Tip of the tool. Man.
Tools of the trade.
Tool of the trade. Thank you, sir. So I think that's a great tool to trade for this week, and one that we will, I'm sure, get a ton of practice on.
I sincerely hope so.
So
let's talk about a student tip, though.
Yeah, yes, sir. A trade of the tip.
Yeah.
A trade of the chip.
tool of the student.
So student tip for the week. Okay, so we've talked about a little bit of written communication and doing patient charts. There are so many ways to write a narrative during your report writing. The one that I use predominantly is D-chart, right? It's another mnemonic device that kind of signifies the different important aspects of that narrative. There's a SOAP narrative, right? Another mnemonic device. And then there's a chronological narrative. My tip for you guys is going to be to figure out what your service uses or likes to use, and then really start delving into and practicing writing some narratives. Because remember, it is a legal document. So you do need to make sure that you've got all the information in there that's required. So pick a narrative style and just start practicing that, or figure out what narrative style the different agencies and services you might interact with use, and see if somebody can get you maybe a redacted one so you can have an example. So definitely ask those types of questions. And that's the student tip.
I'm going to start calling Jonathan Johnny Mnemonic.
Yes, I like it.
There's so many in this field. There's so many in this profession. I can't help it.
I blame the military. 110%. I blame them.
I think it's just a human thing. Like I actually did a little bit of a deep dive into what mnemonics are and how long they've been around, and they're from Greek history. Like that's how long we've been.
It's the Greeks' fault. That's what you're trying to say is blame Greece.
Well, Greece is blamed for pretty much everything. If it has to do with society, it's their fault. But yeah, so no, that's great. Thank you, sir.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I think we've beat communication to death. I don't think we ever have to do it ever again.
Nope. I think we're done. We never need to mention it one more time.
We can sit silent here in the EMS world.
No need to communicate with our fans.
Rest on our laurels.
Nope, exactly.
And just sit in the corner and not have to talk to anybody.
I like that.
Yeah. And just treat people as they come in the door to us.
Yes, exactly. With shame.
We could just be like EMT hermits.
Judge and shame them as they come through the door.
Those exist. They do exist.
They do exist.
I've seen them.
So that's everything. Next week's episode is, we mentioned it earlier. I think we're going to be talking about pharmacology.
That's going to be deep.
Hopefully if the class schedule stays what we expect based off of the schedule. So, pharmacology should be a good time, and, we'll know how all the good stuff.
Lots of Latin.
I don't think it's not a lot of Latin.
I think it's a bunch of Latin
in pharmacies, pharmaceutical stuff. Anyway, we'll talk more about pharmaceuticals next time. But thank you all again for taking the ride with us, and we'll see you next time on the Ride Along. This podcast is for educational and storytelling purposes only. It is not medical advice or official EMT training. Always follow your accredited instructors and local protocols. Heartbeats racing.